Brandon.
Hello, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is on for episode 109. Hooray!
See, after last week, you switching up your intro, now I feel really self-conscious about doing the same thing. So next week, something new.
Okay, sounds good. We can work that out. It's all about kind of, you know, messing around, keeping it fresh. Kids still say that, right?
I guess. Or as they say on Pete Holmes' podcast, keep it crispy.
Well, hopefully you can still get Pete Holmes' podcast in this New World Order. No, there's not another patent troll. Oh, well, maybe there is. Maybe there's another patent troll around podcasting, but we're specifically talking about Comcast. We've talked a little bit about it in the past that Comcast was merging with Time Warner Cable, thus making it the largest. They were taking essentially the number one and the number two cable and internet providers and smashing them together to be even bigger than whatever number three is. This was going through some period of FCC comment, and Comcast was also getting a lot of flack during the net neutrality stuff because of some of its practices around Netflix and stuff like that. And I guess one of the bigwigs at Comcast decided to respond in kind of an official capacity about some of the negative press had been getting. And he pretty much comes out and says that the majority, or, you know, the people have spoken in the public comments, and most everybody gets it that it's a good idea for Comcast to merge with Time Warner Cable. Yeah, I don't understand. It's not even selective memory or anything like that. It's pretty much ignoring public comment and using whatever media source it was to just say that and have that as a quote out in the world. I guess some of his stuff and some of his points are true. I mean, people are saying that, yeah, it'll be a monopoly and it's bad for business because it's, they're crowding out kind of smaller cable operators. And he goes on to point out, well, no, it's actually not changing any competition levels because in the markets where Comcast is, Time Warner Cable is not, and vice versa. So they're not, you know, changing the playing field. There's still the same number of carriers in any given region.
But it's one big carrier.
Right. I think he quietly overlooks the fact that one carrier has a lot more weight in terms of marketing and sales and everything else. So it would probably still further imbalance how competition is supposed to work out in internet land. So yeah,
I think we have to include the direct quote because it you couldn't have. I mean, somebody wrote it clearly, but it's like something out of fiction. Virtually all commenters recognize and concede either explicitly or through their silence that the transaction will deliver substantial consumer welfare and public interest benefits to residential and business customers and in the advertising marketplace.
Ooh.
David Executive VP David Cohen. Remember that name.
Not a thing.
And definitely make sure this week to click on the link to check out the article from Ars Technica. It has a picture of this gentleman, and I don't understand it.
No, it's epic. I mean,
very nice suit with glasses. He looks kind of like a mole. But that's not the interesting part. He's in this urban environment with some mural behind him with like a chain link fence. Why is he wearing a suit? It doesn't make sense.
No, it would almost be a publicity photo if you could tell what he was trying to publicize.
He's hip and with, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a pretty rough sell from many angles, most of which are kind of the mind. If you've listened to the show in any capacity, you will know that our stance on Comcast in general is that it's not a thing. But I think it's especially interesting to note how he rounds up people who are silent and people who are kind of in quote unquote in favor of the merger. And so, you know, if you don't want to be counted in that group, it might be worth checking out the public comment section and maybe dropping them a line. I feel that silence equals compliance is not a way to to.
And I'm sure the numbers of comments were not in the majority in favor of it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got that reality disconnect of, well, if you agree with me, then you're right. That's all of you. If you disagree with me, your opinion doesn't count. And if you're not saying anything, clearly you agree with me.
Yeah.
It's just total disconnect.
Nope. Critical thinking was not on his high school educational docket, I guess.
I should have paid less attention. I could be an executive vice president of a giant evil corporation.
That reminds me of, did you ever see, I think it was Kids in the Hall. It had this weird sketch where they're these guys that are, and Kids in the Hall is Canadian, so let me set that scene. They are singing the French, Alouette, Jante, Alouette, and they're going through this. These guys that look like hunters, and they're going through this this hallway of an office as if it were like a river. In fact, they're in a boat, if I'm remembering correctly. So it's very surreal. But they're clubbing office workers who are trapped in their little bear traps, and so it's kind of a weird scene. But they come across a guy who has gnawed his own leg off at the joint in order to escape the trap. And one of the guys is about to club him. And the first guy says, oh no, he might be vice president. Yeah.
I had not seen that one, but I'll check that out.
I might have to look that one up just so to prove that I'm not completely like fever crazy or anything. It wasn't some, you know, drunken stupor that built that story.
Well, it's been a while since Kids in the Hall.
Yeah, and what I've been drinking has not been quite that stupendous anyway. I'm having a very decent but not overly wonderful wonderful beer. It's actually just the New Belgium Snapshot, which I do like, but it's just okay right now. Easy drinking, but not really much else.
Mm.
How about you? Anything for this week?
Nope, just fresh water.
And there might be some more of that for California, hopefully, this next day or so. It looks like there's rain in the forecast. That'll be two Thursdays in a row that it's going to rain.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Rain on Thursdays?
Definitely.
It should be for California. The drought is real, and it's real depressing. So we're going to move on. And actually look at a story that we talked about last week about Long Point. So Long Point is that four-day historical European martial arts kind of festival. And I had talked about it last week and how I'd look into it. And apparently, not that far away from here in Mountain View, you know, with no traffic, quick ride away, is a fighting school, La Scuola St. George. I'm sure that's, I believe it's Italian is what they're going for, but it's you know, armor and swords, and it's some mix of like one-handed swords and bucklers or two-handed swords. And I look them up, and the chapter in the Bay Area is one of the bigger ones. So they have an open practice every Sunday from 2 to 4. Now, if I weren't already taking a taiko drumming class up to 1:30 on Sundays, I might have tried to swing it. So I might look into it after the drumming after the drumming dies down. So in late October, early November, I might have to check it out. Although I might just go over and you know, just to, you know, be a looky-loo. We'll see this week. We'll see. There's a lot going on this weekend. But kind of in the same vein, although probably, you know, not poking with swords, but poking with spears. There was a guy who was in his house, and someone was breaking in, and he definitely heard him and was like, what do I do? And he grabbed a spear, which he apparently keeps by his bed, because he's a Society for Creative Anachronism, like kind of fight reenactor, and he went for the guy's head. And there's a picture of the perpetrator with like a huge shiner, because clearly he was able to block it, but only deflect it a little bit because it still hit him in the face. And yeah, I mean, maybe not the best thing to get poked with, but I'm glad at least for that guy's sake he was able to deflect it a little bit. No one died. It was reasonably okay.
It's another article with a great direct quote from the I guess it'd be the spearer.
Yep.
The spear-y, the guy who defended his home, said, "I am a Christian man, yep, and I don't want to take life. However, I want to make sure that he understands that his life was mine to take. I let him have it."
That quote is gonna be like carved in wood above his door, like the next week, I'm sure.
His life was mine to take, and I let him have it.
Yeah, yeah. That guy reads books. And you know which ones. Oh, that's great. I don't know if I would want to. What would I want to keep? A spear? A spear is pretty good. I guess it keeps distance. I feel like a sword, you know, you can kind of poke someone with a sword, but it's also, you know, it needs kind of a lot of run room if you're gonna swing it at all. I think
weapons.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with shotgun, actually.
With what?
With shotgun.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I've got one of those.
I think that might be the way to go. I think spear is an interesting choice, though. You don't really see people going for spear. I think it's underrated for sure.
There's a lot less stucco work to do if you take it someone with a spear rather than a shotgun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. But no, I like my combination of shotgun and Little League aluminum bat.
Oh, nice.
I'm prepared for any situation.
Got your distance, got your close quarters. It works out.
Yeah. I go Casey Jones style.
Now, where's the school that teaches us how to do that?
It's called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It was a live-action film released in the early 90s. Just watch that.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Well, you know, something that I think the turtles may have eaten, well, it's in the same vein, sort of. Not exactly. It's not. It's kind of a pasta ish. No, not really. I don't know.
No. It's if you go with pasta, it's not pizza, and if you go with ninjas, it's Chinese. So yeah. You're wrong on all counts.
And it's noodles. It's not the right kind of noodles. It's like, you know. Anyway. In this loose conflagration of topic switching, a noodle store in China has gained a fair amount of notoriety, not for its noodles being especially good, but I bet everyone they asked thought they were, because apparently they were all laced with opium.
On purpose.
So in order to make them, I guess, kind of keep them coming back, the shop owner decided to lace his bowls of noodles with opium. And it sounded interesting because it looked like he had bought essentially about $100 worth of opium. And I have no idea what that quantity is.
But 2 kilograms.
But in order for that to work in a food service kind of industry and be detectable, I feel like, you know, you're essentially putting a lot of, you're investing a lot in your, you know, your costs are going to be way up. Your expenditures are going to outweigh your income a little bit.
Which is guaranteeing repeat business.
So maybe it was the kind of thing, like, this would be like a promotional kind of noodles kind of thing. And so during that 2 weeks, it would hook everyone and then it would just go away quietly. I mean, I don't know how that would be like sustainable at all.
Well, I don't know what the dosage for opium is, so a little bit might go a long way.
It's very possible. Although the reason they found out about it was that someone was pulled over for driving erratically or whatever, and tested positive for opium, and somehow they were able to tie it back to this guy's place. I guess he said that, you know, it was some weird thing where the only thing he'd eaten that day was the noodles at this guy's place, and so they somehow tracked it back to him and was like, "Oh, sorry, that's what I did."
Well, the crazy part is this is not the first time this has happened.
No. Apparently, this happened in 2012 and 2010. So every other year, on even numbered years, be careful where you eat noodles while you're in China.
So it's even numbered, like the Star Trek movies, the good ones.
Well, so it's arguable that flipped over after they switched to Next Generation, because Insurrection was 9. Am I doing that right? Oh, no.
So 6 was original cast.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah.
Then you had Generations.
So that's 7.
So that's not good. So
yeah.
And then you had First Contact, which was 8.
And that was good.
That was good.
Yeah. And then you had Insurrection, which was 9, which was okay.
I didn't care for it.
And then Nemesis, which was 10, which was not good. Okay, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it all falls apart after.
No, it's. I mean, it's entertaining. It's not good. Tom Hardy as Picard? Come on.
I had read that in the original draft, he was supposed to have hair. And if you watch, you know, Next Generation, there's the episode where he
gets stabbed in the heart.
Yeah, and he has hair in that episode. So it's one of those things that that annoyed me from that.
Well, I mean, he was trying to emulate him, and his context of him is the current bald Picard. So
was he shaving his head or waxing his head?
Probably. Well, I mean, he also grew up among an alien species that does not have hair.
Okay. All right.
I'm grasping at straws here. It's a terrible movie. Riker finally gets his own ship at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know. I think it flipped when we went to the J.J. Abrams verse.
Yeah.
Because the first one was good.
Yes.
The second one, not so good.
No.
But it's an alternate timeline. So in the alternate timeline, the odd-numbered ones are good, and the ones are bad. And in the prime timeline, the odd ones are good.
Yeah.
Or at least entertaining.
It mostly works. Yeah. Well, if nothing else, we at least get some respite this week from the coming robot apocalypse. So we have some great news. There's a way now to better tell the difference between when you get a handwritten note in the mail, if it was written by a person or if it was written by a robot. So if you've ever gotten like mass mailers that have handwriting in them, very frequently those are not actually handwritten. They're actually written by a robot. I mean, they were written by something holding a pen. It wasn't a font that was spit out necessarily. It was like a pen on kind of an Etch-a-Sketch kind of rig that was motorized, and it would write in, you know, some handwriting style. But what a couple people figured out was there's a way to tell, or a few ways to tell, if it's written by a robot or not. And so the one way which I have used is just to look for completely consistent letters, usually letters like I or J or T, because they're the dotting the I or crossing the T is done kind of, I don't know about you, but I tend to do those after I've written the word, not immediately as I write the letter. Whereas in a robot, often it will do, not only will it do it kind of consistently every time, it will look the same every time. It won't, whatever it does, if it does it after the letter or after the word, an I in, you know, the first word will look like the same as an I in a different word. And so matching up those kinds of letters and seeing if those fit together is one good one. But I thought the one about the clear middle, I thought was a really interesting technique. And that's because as you're writing, as long as you're writing kind of along a straight line, there's kind of a point where you're either stretching or pulling, and that's like the top end of the letter or the bottom end of the letter. So the ink will be slightly discolored versus the middle of the letter, where it will often be the most even pressure, because that's like the easy point in your stroke. And so if you look at someone's handwriting, it's kind of darker in the top half of letters and darker in the bottom half of letters, but in the middle it's kind of lighter. And if you see that, then it was written by a person versus a robot. It's really fascinating, like the level of detail to search this out. I'm a little concerned that the analysis will only go towards making robots better at handwriting.
Detectable.
But in the meantime, you know, it's a good couple of things to check out.
Well, I don't have to ever worry about being confused with a robot, because my handwriting is more likely to be confused with that of a child. I'm getting to the point where I write so rarely because I type everything.
Sure.
I can barely read my own writing.
I actually have been writing more recently just to essentially keep up the practice, because otherwise I was falling into the same boat very quickly. So I've been carrying a Field Notes notebook with me everywhere, and I will try to write down. I've been changing it up. I was trying to write down kind of diary, like this is everything that happened that day. And sometimes it's just like too much. So I was like, okay, so what are the high points? What are the things I actually care about that would happen? And so I write down anything cool that people say, anything really interesting that happens that day, very noteworthy stuff like that. And then any food and drink that that I have, and then anything that's really, really good gets kind of a mention on one of the pages towards the back. So what's really fun is going back at the end of every month and seeing like, oh, so what was the best like drink I had this whole week? And so currently I had the Evil Twin Molotov cocktail. It's an IPA from Evil Twin Brewing, the guys that do what do they do? Shallow Grave. And anyway, Molotov cocktail is a 13% beer. It is amazing. Yeah.
That's borderline not beer.
But it's I thought it was surprising because it's not a barley wine, so you don't have kind of like a heavy syrupy flavor. It's just an ale. It's an IPA. So it's very, very it's very heavy, and yet still like crisp and hoppy enough that it fits really well. Also, really strong beer. I don't recommend it before riding a bicycle for 10 miles. It's fun on a night out or whatever, but that's actually how I encountered it. I had me and folks from work were doing like a weekly bike ride, and so we would ride from work to downtown San Jose, which is about 10 miles, stop at San Pedro Square Market, get a beer, you know, hang out for a little bit, and then ride back. I mean, thankfully, I was in the middle of the pack. Let's just say that. There are a couple points where it's like, oh, I'm not glad I'm not, you know, wayfinding or trying to catch up or anything like that. It was just a good easy ride. Unfortunately, with it getting darker a lot sooner, we're probably not going to be doing that after work. So that means more beer for me, I guess.
I support this life decision.
Well, another decision we can support is also about robots. Now, usually, I think everyone who's listened to the podcast knows our stance on robots and drones, especially anything automated, is for the most part not a thing. There are occasionally exceptions, like we have an exception for self-driving cars. I mean, it has a bunch of caveats, but for the most part, we think that's a good idea. And I think we're adding another one to the exception pile this week. The aptly named Octobot is coming out. It's a study in how to make something propel itself in water kind of more efficiently. And so rather than use a propeller or anything else, they gave a little robot fins, 8 of them, hence the Octobot, and it kind of acts like an octopus in that but rather than like forcing water using its siphon, it's actually using those fins to move the water as it goes, and I just think it looks really cute.
I know we discussed this before we started recording very briefly, and I was totally on board at that point. But in the interim 40 minutes, I've had a little time to think. I'm not sure this should be a thing.
Oh, no.
Hear me out. It is cute. And it looks really cool. And that's the problem.
It's insidiousness. Is that what you're saying?
It's very insidious. And think about this. It's now a robot that can move quickly underwater. You know what can't move quickly underwater? Humans. You can't even escape to the water.
That's a very, very good point.
It's like the first generation, those things from the Matrix. Is it the Sentinels? What are those things called?
Oh, the, the Sentinel droids. They,
That's so exactly funny. What this is. When this they're, is a proto-Sentinel.
When they're, when they're described in the movie, they're sentinels. They're robots with only one mission, And then I think Dozer or Tank says that they're sent or robots with only one mission. Then Dozer says, "Seek and destroy." That's two things, guys. Yeah. Two things. Anyway,
I mean they're cooperative goals. You can't destroy without seeking.
I suppose not. I suppose. Anyway,
but think about it, man. You're trying to escape the robot apocalypse. You think, oh, I'll get in the water. They can't go in water. They're electronic. Nope. You're dead.
Well, hopefully.
Or, oh, what's that cute thing coming towards me? Oh, it's an octopus bot.
As long as they don't.
And that's when the lasers come out.
Yeah. As long as they don't put a beak on it, it'll be okay, right? Isn't that how that works?
No, they could just put, I don't know, some sort of explosive on the end.
Oh, okay. All right.
The end looks like a torpedo.
Okay, I think you're
a slippery slope.
You're selling me on this one. I think we can push this back into the not a thing category.
They almost got us, Alan. That's why you got to be constantly vigilant. Constant vigilance. If Harry Potter has taught us anything, and it's taught us a lot, but most importantly, constant vigilance.
Well, something that's taught us a lot, you know, besides the books, is TV. So we're going to move a little bit,
isn't though?
kind of into spoiler land a little bit. You mentioned that you picked up a show this week.
I did. Apparently, I joined millions of other Americans who were much earlier to the game than I, and binge-watched the first season of The Blacklist, starring the great James Spader. Yeah, there's a reason Netflix paid $2 million an episode for a 22-episode season.
Wow. Wow. That's wild.
But it's not the best show ever. It's a very split show because it's a procedural, which is ridiculous. Like, conceptually dumb. But James Spader's performance as Red Reddington is so good that it keeps you watching. And the mysteries that they set up through the first season keep you so hooked that you put up with the other 30 minutes of bullshit and 12 minutes of really good show.
Oh, wow. Okay. I think that's interesting because I think I had a similar kind of interest in what was it? Well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., really. I mean, I had a lot of kind of interest in the show, but I wouldn't say it was even like a 50% interest. It was maybe 25% of the show I wanted to see. So you're saying that, like, in a, you know, about 40 to 45 minutes show, it's worth it for that those 15 minutes?
Well, I mean, I guess maybe it's more than 15 minutes. It's any scene with James Spader in it, because he just chews on the scenery like a master.
Sure.
Most of the acting is pretty bad. They get cool guest stars. If you like the show Alias, it reminds me a lot of that.
Okay.
And you get Harry Lennox from Dollhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
So okay. It's got a lot of potential. The second season just started. It started really strong. I feel like the first season was them kind of like figuring things out, setting things up. And I think there's going to be a lot of payoff this year.
Is it CBS?
Don't betray me, Blacklist.
Is it CBS?
I think it's NBC.
Okay. I'm remembering because for a while here's my Hawaii 5-0 anonymous kind of moment. I watched that show way too long, much longer than any person should have reason to. I'm not sure if it's still on.
It is. I've seen ads for it during football.
That's amazing. Anyway, that show is also kind of, it's a procedural, and I would say that there's maybe 7 minutes of show per week that I'd want to see from that.
Oh, this has a much higher ratio than that. Okay. It's very violent. Hmm. For network TV, I was kind of impressed.
Hmm.
NBC seems to be stepping out a bit with that and Hannibal.
Well, that's good. I think, you know, flexing that a little bit isn't necessarily a bad thing. As long as it's, you know, within the bounds of taste.
Oh yeah.
I think I do have a show or two. I never picked up Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. again to kind of catch up. And that's back too, right?
That's back. I actually just watched that before we started recording. I watched the newest episode. It was pretty good. I just spoke to a friend of the podcast, Phil. Not Phil Coulson, a different Phil. and he just rewatched the whole first season back to back. And he said it was a lot better and flowed a lot better than when they were broadcasting live, because it would be on for a week, off for a week, off for 3 weeks, then back. But if you watch it all in a row, it actually flows much better.
Hmm.
Like it was designed for DVD rather than broadcast.
Wow. Yeah. I feel like Cosmos was like that when that was on, because like the commercial breaks.
That's just poorly edited.
Just never felt in the right place.
No. Every week, I would go home and watch that with my family, and my one of my family members would get really mad about the commercial. Every week.
Yeah.
Learn to edit.
There's a group that watches MythBusters episodes, and they recut them to remove all of the post-commercial recaps.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I think it makes the show like 14 minutes long or something.
Well, it's like watching Jeopardy without commercials. You're done in like 15 minutes, 12 minutes.
Right.
Although now they've really edited MythBusters with getting rid of Grant Carey and...
Tori. Yeah, I think that's an interesting choice. I'm not sure I'm sold on that return to kind of original form on that. Only because
I'm gonna say not a thing.
Yeah, I feel like they're sort of grasping at what they're calling myths. There was a period where it seemed like every other myth, or even more frequently than that, was just something from a movie they wanted to reenact. So I think...
Yeah, the myth never gets busted, but then they always got to blow it up. And or I guess the myth always gets busted, and then they have to blow it up.
I do appreciate, you know, a good explosion now and again, but I think having the other three at least gave a little bit more... I don't know, it broke it up a little bit, because I was worried... A little bit in, I don't know if it was the very first season or the second season, but they were trying to play up more of a tension angle between Adam and Jamie. Like they were at odds with each other, and it was very kind of reality show manufactured drama kind of a thing.
But I think there is actual drama between them.
Oh, probably, but I think... I think pointing it out in the way that they were doing was unnecessary, because they were doing the kind of individual interviews where you're essentially talking about the other person without them being there and stuff like that. And it, I don't know. If the show is moving back towards that, it may fall off my radar. I don't know. We'll see. I do and have enjoyed MythBusters for quite a while. And in fact, not too long ago, if you go to St. George's Spirits in Alameda, which I highly recommend you do because it's a great distillery, that is the Alameda Naval Base when they are invariably testing some kind of remote control car rig and they lose control of it and it goes through a fence. That's that lot. So it's you know, it's fun, and it's kind of local history for the most part. So St. George's Spirits, definitely a thing. New Mythbusters, maybe not a thing. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., probably a thing. I should probably get back on it. It would be good to do it sooner rather than later if I'm going to do it.
Jump into it.
The Blacklist, a thing.
Yeah, check it out at your own risk. You may not like it. I don't know. I was very conflicted, but there were many times where I shouted, "Oh, shit!" at my TV. And not many shows do that anymore, so...
No, that's a very valid metric.
Now that 24 is gone and Alias is gone and everything's gone.
Breaking Bad is gone.
Yeah.
Although they are rerunning the hell out of it on Sundays. I was kind of getting sick of watching the 49ers like self-destruct again. And so I flipped over just as they were doing the I Am the One Who Knocks speech. It was perfect. It's like, all right, this is where I'm going to be for the rest of Sunday afternoon. Thanks, AMC. Cool. Well, I think we have found enough things and not things for this week. I think I'll talk to you next week, Brendan.
Till next time, Alan.